My name is Silke and I'm an alcoholic. This is an open meeting of the Atlanta Group of Alcoholics Anonymous and all are welcome to attend. It is our belief that our meeting structure is necessary to maintain the integrity of the group so that we may better carry the message of AA, since the most important aspect of AA recovery is one alcoholic relating to another alcoholic. I lost my line. And since the most important aspect of AA recovery is only one alcoholic relating to another, only alcoholics participate. Excuse me. If your primary problem is other than alcoholism, we think it would be helpful for you to contact an anonymous organization which more specifically deals with your addiction. Our literature person, Dustina and Kobe. No hands. Oh, they're in the back. Have the list of such groups with their phone numbers. In any case, we hope that you will that what you learn here may be helpful to your recovery and or understanding. Dolores will read the preamble.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Dolores and I am an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Please join in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Dory will read the steps.
Hi, I'm Dory. I'm an alcoholic. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. Humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. Made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
And Dave will read the traditions.
I'm Dave, I'm an alcoholic. The 12 traditions. One, each member of Alcoholics Anonymous, is this right? Where am I reading from? Oh, I'm sorry. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting the group, other groups, or AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
The format of tonight's meeting is one 10-minute speaker, our information break, and the main speaker who will speak for 25 minutes, followed by the anniversary celebrants. Our first 10-minute speaker is Maureen.
Hello, my name is Barry, actually, and I am an alcoholic. First of all, I'm super grateful to be here, and you know, I absolutely love that there are so many glitches getting started tonight, because that is what my recovery is. My recovery is not perfect, it's messy, but the bottom line is that I show up and I do it, and I don't do it perfectly. So, yeah, I'm Barry, and I'm an alcoholic, and first of all, I just want to say also it's an extreme honor just even to be asked to speak in an AA meeting. I mean, it's a total honor just to be here, and you know, that someone would want to sit here and listen to my story or a little bit of my experience. And so I just want to say that I'm very grateful for that. And the second thing is that this is kind of nerve-wracking, but I do it anyways because I've been taught in these rooms to show up no matter what. Whenever AA reaches out, I say yes, if I can. I mean, I don't cancel my life for AA, but I definitely make myself available. And that's been a huge part of my sobriety. So I'll just tell a little bit about kind of why I'm standing here and like why I come to these rooms. First of all, my sobriety date is July 31st, 1998. I don't come from an alcoholic family, but I do have the disease. The gene might be somewhere, but I don't know who has it. But I always like to point that out because I'm not, you know, I suffer from terminal uniqueness. I think I'm different. I think I'm special. And I'm not, so I just like to put that out there. And let's see, I took my first drink when I was 14, and you know, I didn't really like it, to be honest with you. But what I liked about it is that I felt different. I didn't feel human feelings, I felt the feelings that the alcohol were giving me. And because of that, I continued to drink it, and I just kept drinking it until I could handle it, until it didn't make me sick anymore, and then I was off to the races. And I suffered consequences immediately from it, meaning I couldn't really manage it, I couldn't do it safely. You know, adolescence wasn't a good time. I suffered lots of consequences. Immediately started stealing, hanging out with the wrong people, did, you know, I know this is AA, but I immediately got right into the drugs because of the alcohol. And alcohol was always there throughout the entire thing. And let's see, some of the consequences were, you know, getting into juvenile detention centers. I was in my first program treatment center when I was 15. And it says in our book, it says that, you know, it doesn't say these words exactly, I'm going to paraphrase, but we have a gift in the sense that we're recovering alcoholics, and other alcoholics will listen to us because it says in the book that we're equipped and we can win the confidence of any man. And for some reason at 15, I remember talking to this counselor, and I wouldn't listen to her, and I don't know where this came from, but I said, what is your experience, you know? I mean, are you just a doctor that's coming from these books? Like, what's the deal here? Truth of the fact is that she was just a doctor and she didn't have the experience. And so her words meant nothing to me. And alcoholics' words mean a lot to me because they've stood in my shoes. They know what it feels like to be powerless. They know what it feels like to break promises, to, you know, be a tornado running through people's lives, not wanting to do it, but they can't stop drinking. And that's my experience. And so it didn't get any better. The adolescence just kept going. It just kind of dwindled down and just got worse and worse, got into more trouble. And really all I wanted to do is get fake ID and go to bars and live independently. That's all I wanted to do since I was a teenager. And so I managed that and I did that. And then at 18, I ended up moving to Europe. And so the fake ID went out the window because the drinking age was 18, so I was in heaven. I moved there and it just got worse and worse. And you know, this whole time I wasn't feeling, I was hardened, my heart was frozen, afraid, running, just running, running, running. No real relationships, no real friends. I had a boyfriend just because they needed to be there, you know, as my companion. But I didn't have, just so I didn't suffer ultimate loneliness, but I was definitely alone. And so it just got worse and worse. And then, you know, I just want to quickly get on to the good stuff. But as a result of my disease, I ended up in really ugly places. I crossed a lot of lines. I did a lot of yets, things I said I would never do, you know. And I just wasn't even ready. Like, I knew as an adolescent that I had something wrong with me. I knew that I couldn't quit. I knew I was different. You know, I buy the concept in the book that it says that this is a disease and we're bodily and mentally different than our fellows. I completely buy that because I've been around too many people that don't react to it like me. And so from the age of 24 to 28, I ended up in about 10 treatment centers and 3 psych wards, a little bit of AA sprinkled throughout that. And the fact of the matter is that I wasn't giving myself completely over to a sponsor. I mean, I can't even talk about God then. I mean, I couldn't even give myself over to, like, I always kept a little percentage, like, I'm going to do it my way. You know, I can do it like 50% your way, but I'm going to do the rest my way. And the results were is that I never got sober. I never got relief. The obsession never left me. I was just tortured. And I mean, I even hit a bottom where, as a result of this disease, I was found turning blue in the face. Oxygen was cut off. I was about 3 minutes from death. I went ahead and drank a week after that, and I blamed it on because I mixed alcohol and drugs. And so I said, just don't mix them. Just keep going. You know, just, like, manage this. Because I didn't really want to die. I just wanted to continue getting loaded. And so I don't really know. I kind of asked myself, like, what was the straw that broke the camel's back? Like, what made me do it so I could share this with someone? You know, I think it was a combination of just being sick and tired of being sick and tired, finally giving myself over to this program 100%, finally doing everything that they told me to do, that you guys told me to do. And I've never found more love than in these rooms, I have to say. I mean, the gentleness at which you people come at me or at us in a way that I can handle it. I mean, and the love that surrounds it is just, it's baffling to me. And, you know, and you keep taking me, you know, you keep taking me no matter what, no matter how. And so let's see. So at the age of 28, I finally decided to do this. And I have to also throw in there, I believe it was a little bit of divine intervention. So I went to my last and final treatment center. From there, they were just like pro AA. They said, you know, get a sponsor. You need to go to a meeting every single day. You need to do the steps, la, 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 la. And so I did that, and I got a sponsor right away. I picked the first woman that was just spewing, like, program. You know, she was spewing the steps, looking down at the floor, and I was like, that's the one. and I chose her, and she took me through, and she really, we got to working on these steps. And in the beginning, the God concept, I know a lot of people get stumbled up on that, and I just want to say, you know, just act as if until it will be revealed to you, I swear. The longer you stay here, the more you clear out your brain, it will be revealed to you. And if you do the steps in clean house. And in my case, you know, I was such a desperate case that I didn't have the luxury to worry about, is there a God, you know? I just wanted to do these steps, get the inventory going here, and move forward. And as a result, I know I have God in my life today. And I have to say that the God in my life, the reason that it works is because it's mostly faith. And that faith I have to practice every single day, and sometimes every single moment of the day. And I reach wherever I can to find that faith, and that could be through people, books, whatever. That was a big deal. And since I have a little bit of time, at 5 years of sobriety, I have to say that I hit a wall in AA. I hated AA. I told them, I was like, I'm done with this drunk logs. I can't hear another one. And the deal was is that I wasn't doing service. I had no home group. Okay, so I wasn't plugged in. I didn't feel purpose, you know. And it says in the big book that our primary purpose is to help the next suffering alcoholic. And that gives me purpose on this planet. I mean, my identity, starting alcohol so young, I had no identity. It was the alcohol. And now that I'm sober, I can put my identity that, oh, you know, I actually have something to give someone. Let me be of service and this and that. And the home group thing was a very important thing for me. To, like, once a week go to the same group, have the same faces see me, show up. Like, these things. Because I did AA for a while, what was convenient to me. And that meant if I was on 80th Street, I would go to that meeting. And if I was at Perry Street, I would just go there. And if I was Midtown, I would go, you know. And I would just kind of do that. And it didn't work. That didn't work. I really needed to, like, make this my focus. And I resisted home group. I was like, home group, coffee, no thanks. But today I'll do it because I need it. So thank you very much for listening.
Additionally, AA speaker tapes may be borrowed from the lending library. As was said, this meeting is open to anyone. However, we are an anonymous fellowship and ask that what you hear and whom you see remain here. If you are speaking at another group and wish some of us to come for support, please write the information on the sheet on the bulletin board. And our main speaker tonight is Marlena.
Hi, my name is Marlena and I'm an alcoholic. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. Thank you, Helen, so much for the opportunity to speak. Let's see, it's also nice to be here on a night where one of my sponsees, the sultry Silka, started the program. And it's also nice to be here on the night that two of my sponsees, the two Lisas, the lovely Lisas, are celebrating their anniversary. And if you notice, we're all wearing black, so it's almost like we planned it this way. Anyway, I spoke here on May 22nd of this year. I read the steps, the 12 steps. And before I spoke, I mentioned that, strange as it may seem, amazing. Excuse me. I didn't realize I'd be that emotional. 40 years ago that night, I had my last drink. And it's an amazing phenomenon because there's so many people in this room who are counting days and people who have, you know, a few years sobriety and... you know, I wonder, how did I get here at this point, you know, 40 years without a drink? When I first came around, there was nobody, obviously, who had 40 years without a drink, because that would have been 1927, and AA wasn't around then. But you know, it's there were people who had some time in the program, and they spoke, and they all sort of had gray hair and looked old, and you know, I couldn't, as far as I was concerned, I had really nothing in common with them. You know, I just couldn't identify. You know, it was too much time, and I'm sure there are some people here who probably cannot fathom, you know, that you could get to this point where you're 40 years without a drink. You know, I look back, and how did I get to this point? You know, it was, you know, it's a day at a time program. You know, it's like it just happens. You don't drink, and the days go on, and the days go on. You know, I got sober out in Los Angeles, and there was a fellow out there at the Brentwood AA meeting that I used to go to, very famous guy in the program who had some time, and he used to always say, no matter what, you don't drink. If your butt falls off, that was the expression. You don't drink. And somehow I picked up on that, but not at the beginning. At the beginning, you know, it was not easy for me. You know, I always like to reflect on what AA was like in those days and what life was like in those days. When I came around the program, you know, I don't remember step meetings. And meetings started at 8:30. And I started in the program out in Los Angeles. But they were hour and a half meetings. We had a coffee break in between. You go to a meeting at 8:30. If you ate dinner before, did whatever you did, you came from work. Then you went to the 8:30 meeting and you got out at 10 or 10:15 and whatever. We used to always go out for coffee. It used to be a late night, obviously. I don't remember rehabs or treatment centers as they are today. Early on when I was new, there used to be people who were in these, like, I can't say insane asylums, but they were mental institutions. And my sponsor and I and a group of people used to go pick them up and bring them to meetings. And there were a couple of young people there. And I remember they were sort of in a daze, you know. We always used to say they're on medication, they're on Thorazine. That used to be the big thing then. And, you know, when I was new, I used to envy them. You know, I wanted to be on Thorazine. You know, I somehow liked the idea of being in a center. Now, I didn't know at that time what kind of center it was, but where, you know, people tell you when to eat. You know, people take care of you. You know, I just felt I could not take care of myself. You know, I got to this program out of complete desperation. You know, when I came around, actually in January of 1967. A friend of mine in California, I was out there to work in the movie business, and I was living at this actor's hotel in Hollywood, and you know, I was so petrified of leaving the room, you know, that I couldn't get out to auditions, I couldn't get out to look for jobs, I couldn't do anything, you know, but that's why I had originally gone out there. And you know, I had become a wine connoisseur because I was in California, and I always heard that's what they did out there. And I used to have these big jugs. You know, they were like you would go into a store now and buy a big, I don't even, you know, it's been so long that I've been around this kind of drinking that I really don't even know how big it was. But it was like when you go into a grocery store and you buy a big jug of apple cider, well, that was the kind of jug that I had for drinking, for being a wine connoisseur. And my friend Dan, who's here, believe it or not, he's in the program still. He's got 45 years sobriety, and he's in New York, but he's an actor, and he was out in California. And he said, let me take you to my program. I had no idea what he meant. But he took me to an AA meeting, and, you know, I can't even tell you what I heard, because I don't know what I heard. But I knew that I'd no place else to go. And so I found somebody to go to the meeting with me, and I used to go regularly. And at the meeting, you know, over time, you know, you hear a lot of the same expressions. And I used to hear, you know, that you don't have to be like that anymore, and you can have anything you want. And, you know, these are the things that appealed to me. You know, I was young, and I had so many things that I wanted. And, you know, and it's sort of like, you know, I continued drinking. I never really thought that I would ever stop drinking. In fact, it wasn't even a consideration, you know, but I was here for the therapy. And, you know, I had known before going to AA that I was an alcoholic. When I used to drink in the bars, I would always identify myself as an alcoholic, so this wasn't anything new. But I just never considered giving up the alcohol because it was like such a part of my life. But anyway, so after about 6 months going to meetings, you know, I decided to stop drinking. You know, it was just that simple. After hearing over and over again, you don't have to have that anymore, and we have an answer for you, and first things first, and life will get better. You know, that's what I like. Life will get better, you know, and you can have a better life. And I don't know if there are any people here who are not happy with what they've got and they want something else. You know, this is the place to be. You know, that's where I was coming from. You know, I knew I didn't want what I had. I didn't necessarily want what you had, but I didn't want what I had. So, you know, I started going to meetings. As I say, I started 6 months before I stopped drinking. Then when I stopped drinking, that's when everything, you know, where everything went crazy, obviously, because I no longer had my medicine. And I went through about 2 months, like you hear the story about biting the bullet or holding on, you know. I mean, I had no program. You know, I would go to meetings, and I knew that somewhere, I guess I heard you have to get a sponsor. I always walked up to the people who were speaking, and I said, "Can I have your number?" And I always took down all these numbers, and I never called anybody. And, you know, and I would love hearing these inspirational stories. Out in California, it's mostly qualification, as you know, qualification, but we call it speaker meetings. And, you know, I loved inspirational talks. You know, there was something about it that would turn me on. So I would go up to these people and I'd ask for their number, and I never did anything with it. Now, my thing in life was always to be different. You know, I always had to be controversial, different, bad. I never wanted to be good. And, you know, I used to go to this group. At the time, it was really not the Pacific group, but it was, you know, I would go to the meetings. One of the guys there used to invite me to go. And, you know, there was something about it. It was known as a controversial meeting. And it was known to attract the crazy people. Well, this was like appealing to me. You know, that's where my standards were. That's where my interests were. You know, don't give me anything ordinary. So that's how the program really began for me. You know, it's interesting how it doesn't really matter how it begins, but as long as it begins, you know, you can come in for the craziest reasons. But if you can somehow, you know, find something here, find something to identify with, and find something that you think you might want to have in your life, you know, and something happened. I eventually found that there was something here that I wanted, and it was very hard at the beginning, you know. I wound up finding a sponsor, obviously, who was the head of this very controversial group, who was known for having the crazies, and that appealed to me, as I mentioned. So I had asked him to be my sponsor, and you know, one of the first, the way he sponsors is you get a lot of assignments and you get a lot of work to do. And for me, that worked. You know, I had to go clean my kitchen, or I had to go, you know, silly things like that, which perhaps if you have short time on the program, you've been told to do this by your sponsor. You know, these are the things that worked for me. You know, I had all these things that I thought were problems or troubles. And, you know, he used to say, you know, give me your troubles, give me your problems, and I'll take them. And I love that because, you know, as I explained, that I was really looking for somebody to take over all of my, you know, all of my pain. And these are the things that I guess for the beginning, you know, if there are people here who are counting days, people with short time, you know, if you think that, you know, it's hard, it is hard. But, you know, there is a lot of, you know, there's wonderful things out there if you can just stay away from the drink. Now, how did I wind up in California? Let me tell you a little bit about my background. I grew up here in New York City, and, you know, it's interesting. I identified so much with Barry. You know, I always felt different. You know, I really don't know where, you know, I wanted to be very much like my mother. My mother was a very glamorous cafe society woman. My parents were divorced when I was very young, and immediately I felt different. But I'd be willing to bet that I felt different from the day I was born. But it was almost like then my environment started feeding into my my differentness, because there's no doubt about it. You know, a lot of people have divorced parents. They don't go around immediately feeling different then. You know, everything that happened from then on was like feeding into this different feeling that I had, that I was something wrong with me. And I was younger than most of the people in my class because I had skipped. Well, this also made me feel something was different. And gradually, as I continued through life, you know, I was always picking up on these situations where I didn't fit in. And I don't remember really my first drink, but I do remember using alcohol as medicine. I would, you know, I would feel uncomfortable in a situation, and I would immediately, you know, that would be my answer. That's how I would handle it. I would, I remember I worked briefly as a, during college, I was working briefly as a jewelry model in the garment center, and one of the attractive guys there asked me out for lunch, and I was like 18 years old, and you know, I knew the next day I was going to lunch with him, so I brought in a little flask from my mother's gin bottle at home. And before I went out to lunch, I went into the bathroom and I drank it down in 2 seconds because I thought that this would make me calm and comfortable and fit in and he'd like me and, you know, all these crazy things that went on for me. I had a terrible drinking career at college. First of all, I was never a good student. I never wanted to be a good student. You know, I mentioned here that my goal in life was to be bad. You know, that's what I, but yet I was a controlled drunk. It's sort of interesting. I never got to the point of where Barry did. You know, I mean, I hear those stories and I realize that could have been me. You know, I could have been in and out of treatment centers. But I was always sort of like holding back, you know. I was like going, I was going out and then holding back and going out and holding back. It was always like there was another person watching me, you know. And yet, very often I was in a blackout, you know. And then I would wake up in situations which were horrible, you know. My college years were really, you know, it's embarrassing. You know, I was there 3 years at Syracuse University. It was during the time that Syracuse had, like, the, you know, the best football team in the country. And, you know, all I did was go to football games and party with the football players. And, you know, the schoolwork was secondary. You know, I cut classes. Nothing mattered except fun, good times, and parties. As I mentioned, my mom had been a glamour girl, and this is what I wanted to emulate. I remember going down to Miami Beach, and I remember, you know, drinking at the Fontainebleau in the Poodle Lounge, you know, and I'm ordering martinis, you know, and I couldn't have been more than like 18 years old. And I mean, I just knew that this is the glamorous life that I wanted. And, you know, if anything, I can tell you my values were totally screwed up. And these are the things that I had before I ever got to the program. And this is how I came in. I dropped out of college, I never completed school because it was totally unimportant. You know, it's interesting. I hear people talk from the podium about how they were strictly A students. I was never an A student. Never even wanted to be. You know, give me a good party. That's what I wanted. How in the world, you know, how does somebody start thinking like this? I'll never know. And I don't know if there are people in here who can identify with that. You know, wild and crazy, that was what I wanted to be known as. After college, when I dropped out, I never could hold on to a job. It's the other thing. I hear people talk all the time about how they held jobs. I never could hold a job. You know, there was something about me that the employer knew was not right, and I always lost. Always lost the job. By the way, today I'm at a job now 18 years, which is sort of amazing. After college, innumerable amount of jobs, and I wound up deciding I wanted to go to Los Angeles and break into the movies. First, I went to San Francisco, and this was during the Haight-Ashbury days. I don't know if any of you ever heard of that, but, you know, it was pretty interesting. And I was definitely not the bohemian type or the hippie type. You know, I had no political agenda. I really did not care about the war. The war then was the Vietnam War. The only thing I cared about was the possibility that Congress was going to ban saccharin. That's where I was coming from. It's true. You know, I was, everything was about me. You know, if it involved me, then it was something I cared about. I moved from San Francisco down to L.A. I was only in San Francisco about 9 months. And in L.A., as I say, is when I was sort of floundering around and where am I going to wind up? And, you know, that's how I wound up going into the program and, you know, not drinking one day at a time. Now, as I mentioned, the program was real rough for me at the beginning. I always am amazed to hear people speak about how, you know, how they feel, because for me, I never, you know, we used to have meetings where people would call you up to the podium, and I used to hide down behind somebody so I wouldn't get picked on. But every once in a while, I get picked on, and I was with a group who was very active, and there was no way I could say, I pass. You know, that wasn't going to go over. So I had to get up and speak. And but, you know, if I got up there to speak, you can be sure that I spewed a lot of nasty anger. You know, I was always in a, I shouldn't be here, what am I doing here? And, you know, I got so many other places to go, which is so funny because I really had no place else to go. So, you know, if anything, those of you who are here and wondering what you're doing here, you know, you can identify with this, you know, that you don't have to really have the reasons to be here. You just have to be here. Eventually, it will come. When I started to say that, as Barry had mentioned, you know, I also suffered from interminable uniqueness. You know, that was real important to me. And my sponsor once said to me, don't worry, try and fit in. You're never going to be that unique. I mean, he said, you're never going to lose your uniqueness. Try and fit in. And, you know, the best thing that's really happened in my life is that I do try and fit in. You know, I don't have to be unique anymore. I mean, we all have our specialness. But, you know, if we can somehow fit into this program and fit into what keeps people sober, you know, you will feel good about yourself. And isn't that what this is all about? You know, getting comfortable with ourselves. So much of when I was in the program at the beginning, you know, it's interesting how, I keep skipping around, but, you know, I've had the opportunity to work with sponsees. And if anything, you learn, you know, part of the 12 steps is the service aspect, which is the 12th step. And that has really given me the opportunity to, you know, to really sort of see the progress in other people. And it's an amazing thing how, you know, to become actually to care about somebody else. You know, when I was new, you know, the thing, I never wanted to be a sponsor. You know, this was totally not for me. You know, in fact, if any good-looking blondes came around, I was sort of hoping they'd get drunk. You know, I didn't want... but in the group that I was involved in, it was real important for us to do service. So I had to, like, we used to have regular cups then. You know, mugs. We had mugs. No styrofoam cups. I don't know why. There were no paper cups then. I'm sure there were, but we never used them. And after the meeting, you know, you would have to go in the kitchen and help wash or dry the cups. So I was given the job of drying the cups. And, of course, I'm in the kitchen. I always mention this. And, you know, I'm looking around. I'm socializing. And every time my sponsor looks over, I immediately start drying a cup. And, you know, this is how it was for me at the beginning. You know, maybe because I was young and goofy and silly that I got away with a lot of stuff. But it worked for me. You know, whatever it takes, it worked for me. You know, every time I remember the very famous expression, yeah, but. I mean, it's not part of my vocabulary today. But, you know, I always was sure, yeah, but. Okay, do this. Yeah, but. You know, and I'm sure all of you who have a short time on the program know what I'm talking about. You know, our case is different. Our case is different. Yeah, but you can do that, but not me. And, you know, that's not how it is, you know. It will work. And, you know, say all the yeah buts you want, but keep coming back. At some point, you know, I went through a lot of pain in my my sobriety. And I'm not really sure why, because, believe me, my life is a lot more complicated today. And when I work with, you know, with people on the program, and I see that they say, you know, it's terrible, it's never going to be any different. And, you know, all of us know that when you're in the middle of it, it does seem like it's never going to be any different. But the pain really does change, you know, it leaves, the troubles leave. But, you know, when you're in the middle of it, you know, it's impossible for you to believe that it won't. And that's probably why we need a sponsor, to give us that kind of inspiration and that hope that it is going to change for you. It's, you know, as I'm around a long time, there are a number of things that I've watched happen in the program. And that is people come around, they stick around a while, and they eventually leave, and then they come back. And I've heard so many times people speak from the podium, and this was especially when I was new, I was very much aware of it. You know, the people would speak from the podium about how they had come to AA and they didn't stick out, didn't stick around, and they left. And now they're back 10 years later, or 8 years later, or 4 years later, or 12 years later, whatever time it might be. And when I used to think about not drinking, you know, I used to realize that that this was, you know, I didn't want to burn those years, you know. I wanted to stick it out now. You know, what would be the point if I'm going to wind up back in this program in 4 years or 6 years? What would be the point of going out and blowing those 4 or 6 years and then winding up in the same place? So these are the little things, you know, that appealed to me, you know, the little tricks I played. You know, early on in my sobriety, I can honestly tell you that there are a couple of days there that maybe I would stay sober because I didn't want to disappoint my sponsor. Has anybody ever felt that way? You know, sometimes those are the little things we have to hang on to in life. Time is coming for me to, I see I'm getting the high sign here. The other thing is, as I've stayed sober, I've seen people come in and out of the program, and I've seen a few people come in drunk after they had some sobriety. I've seen some people die after they've had some sobriety. And my sponsor always used to say things like, better them than me. And I have to tell you, for the longest time, I never understood that. I felt, oh, how heartless. And, you know, today I understand that. I value the time that I have without a drink. And I do believe that it's better them than me. You know, and when I see somebody in pain who's come back, you know, I have enormous empathy for them. And I've learned through their pain that that is not what I want in my life. Let me think. I'd like to, one little anecdote I'll tell you. You know, I always end with this, and, you know, it's a little feather in my cap that I mention this, but there are people here who are sort of, I don't know that well, and probably maybe never heard me talk before. But years ago, when I lived in Los Angeles, I came back to New York to visit my mother, who was living here. I had 1 year sobriety. It was 1968. And I went to the Mustard Seed, which was like the big meeting then. That was like the exciting meeting. And, of course, I wanted to be wherever it was happening. And, you know, I was young, and I thought I was cute. And, you know, I had about a year sobriety. And I walk into the meeting, and a couple of the people latched on to me who had time. And they wanted to show me around AA in New York. And I was invited up to a central office. At that time, I just looked at my book. I have an old book. I have a new book. I have an old book, you know, an old blue book, big book. And so I looked at it today, and it's dated 1955. And and it was World Services, because I always wondered where I was invited up to. And it was on East 45th Street. And I was invited up to have a meeting with Bill W. Well, at the time, you know, what did I know from Bill W., you know, I mean, it was like, yeah, so. And, you know, I went up to World Services, and I had a meeting with him, and I was, you know, it was very exciting. I shouldn't say that. It's exciting now. It wasn't exciting then. I really didn't understand what was going on. But today, you know, what a thrill that I had the opportunity to meet him. You know, and one thing, in chapter 5 of our book, it always says, it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our step. Well, I have to tell you, our path, who thoroughly followed our path. And I have to tell you that as long as I have been around, okay, I mean, there's no doubt about it. It's never have I seen a person fail who's thoroughly followed the path, but the idea is to follow this path. You know, it is something that you can do. It's available to all of you. You know, if you don't stick it out, somebody's waiting to take your seat. You know, this is, you know, we have an opportunity here. We have a design for living. We have a way to go. You know, one thing I have not mentioned, and I will briefly mention it, I have learned in my life to turn things over to a higher power. And I have to tell you, it is an enormous sense of relief at night when I go to bed and I could say, dear God, thank you so much for the day, and please guide me. You know, it's the willingness to allow myself to be guided. And the willingness has given me this program because I was willing to not drink, I was willing to get a sponsor, I was willing to work the steps of the program, and I was willing to find a higher power for myself. And it's the willingness that has given me a life, and I want to thank you.